south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. So I've got some people asking me about new car warranties and guarantees here in Latin America. Well, first of all, I don't really recommend buying a new car down here in Latin America unless you're out looking for a real utility basic model, and they're having a great sale. And you'll see those in Latin newspapers all the time. Now, in Central America, almost all the major car brands have a low-end model. For example, Nissan's got their Sentra, Honda's got their Civic. There's the Kia Picanto and the Hyundai i10. And a couple times a year when they're offering deals, you can get any one of those models for around 10 grand, even less. Tax included. However, those same models in South America, 50 to 100% more. In a past show, I explained why. Anyway, those are all very dependable, compact four-door cars, but they're no great shakes. They're just utility for getting around, and they practically are indestructible. That is, if you're driving during the day and avoid the big potholes and gigantic tumulos, those speed bumps that'll rip out your oil pan and undercarriage even if you hit them at low speed. When you approach one, you almost have to come to a complete stop and kind of roll over them. And still, if you have a couple of people in a small car or some heavyweight gringos, you'll bottom out. So be prepared for that eventuality. It will happen. And if you think that doesn't happen 100 times a day on almost every one of these tumulos, just have a look at the top of them. You'll see the scrapes and gouges caused, hopefully, by other people's oil pans, not yours. Speaking of tumulos, consider this. If you're on the lookout for a used car down here, don't forget to physically inspect the undercarriage of the car to see just how much abuse that car's underbelly has taken from said, sometimes painful speed bumps. And man, when you go over too fast or too heavy and feel the scrape, ow, it goes right through you and it makes you cringe. The only saving grace is when it happens in someone else's car. So have a look under the chassis. It's a way to tell if the previous owner or seller has babied it or not. So the fewer dents and scrapes you see in the undercarriage, the nicer the owner or previous owner was to the car. So beware of gouges, big dents, and sometimes deformed high rods and twisted metal struts. And it's something most people will never check out. They'll walk around the car, sit in it, drive in it, look in the trunk under the hood, check the oil maybe and kick the tires, though rarely will they lay flat on their backs and stick their head under the car. And for the 100th time, I'm going to tell you again, try not to drive at night unless you really know the area. And it's not about physical or personal danger. I'm referring to the fact you could easily hit a tumulo or a big unseen hole and destroy the front end of your car. Or at least cripple it a bit. It's happened to me a number of times. Now, during the dry season, called the summer season down here, that's between October and March, about 6 months. You're not going to have that much of a problem with gaping potholes, but you'll have some real badass speed bumps to deal with all year round. Because, you see, it's always the rainy season that breeds new and unpredictable potholes. By day, you can spot them. But at night, man, every time you go out, even on a familiar road, it's all about luck and timing. And the road crews, yeah, they're out there, but they use a cheap cold patch. And often, just a couple of weeks after a big hole's been patched, well, it's gouged out again. That said, here's another car buying tip. If you're buying a compact or a small car, like the ones I mentioned, they're great on gas, parts are cheap, and very inexpensive to run. Plus, it seems they last forever. Well, they do if you're just using them for local urban transportation in a populated area, but I wouldn't recommend one of those cars for routine long-distance travel. Unless, again, you're driving during the day and you really know that road. Again, it's not about thieves and carjackings. That stuff only happens in areas tuned-in gringos stay far, far away from. It's the much greater probability that little car is going to get damaged and out of commission for a while if you hit a pothole at 50 miles an hour. That will ruin your day. Yep, I've hit a few potholes at high speed and destroyed a few tire rims. And when you're out in the middle of nowhere, well, then what? Yeah, of course, you'll have a spare and it'll actually be inflated because you're a gringo, right? But if it's one of those small basic cars, it'll be one of those disgusting little donuts that you're not supposed to go over 40 miles an hour with. Sheesh, the guy that invented those things ought to be forced to ride on those the rest of his life. How'd you like to be stuck out in the middle of nowhere, 100 miles from nothing, riding on one of those? Meanwhile, when you're 100 miles from nothing with a destroyed rim, now you have to hunt out a garage or a mechanic shop that can find you a new rim and tire. Which is not good news if, let's say, you're taking a trip from Managua, Nicaragua to La Ceiba, Honduras, and on your way to a nice vacation in Roatan. Now, the day's shot, and maybe the whole trip, too. So bottom line, those small cars, cheap, good, even great for the city, but not a very good long-distance transportation solution. Which is why, if you're going to drive, you should be thinking pickup truck or small or medium-sized SUV. Not new, used, of course. That makes you not much of a target at all for bad guys and no good nicks. So skip the small car if you drive outside the city a lot. Again, go for a pickup or small or medium SUV. Why? Because they're higher up off the ground, their tires are much bigger, and they've got oversized heavy-duty suspensions. And it's not that you won't bottom out on a tumalo or speed bump if you're going too fast. You just might, but a vehicle like that is pretty much built to take it, or at least take a few once in a while. And as for potholes, man, they could take a pretty big pothole that would normally disable a small vehicle and come out of it a-okay. I can vouch for that. In fact, I've driven many a pickup and SUV, and I've hit many a man-sized pothole. And as of today, 27 years and counting here in Latin America, I've yet to disable one of those vehicles or blow a tire on a pothole. But sometimes, you know, you're stuck driving at night. I know you're not supposed to do that, right, Johnny? Well, it's not a matter of do what I say, not what I do. It's just that sometimes you're stuck at someone's house or in a traffic jam. Oh, those big city traffic jams here in Latin America blow your mind. Whatever the reason, sometimes you're at an event or a party and it's nighttime, right? Even so, hopefully you know the roads in the area and can maneuver your way around, but don't get overconfident. That's when Murphy's Law kicks in with a new bunch of potholes that weren't there yesterday. Especially after a rainstorm. That's when the fun begins. And why I think it's absolutely crazy to own a motorcycle down here. Unless you live in a small town from 5,000 to maybe 50,000 people. Then a motorcycle could work out quite well. However, beware of the rainy season. Oh, and by the way, this makes no sense at all, but what does in Latin America? Those big speed bumps or tumulos I'm talking about, they run the entire width of a road. Well, kinda, but not quite. You see, where the center line is supposed to divide the highway, there's a funny thing that seems to be universal. Those wretched contractors who install those massive speed bumps always leave about a 6-inch gap there, right in the center of the road, allowing those crazy-ass motorcyclists to whip right through without hitting the tumulo at all. So they don't have to slow down, but you have to or suffer the damages. And to me, that's one of the most craziest, idiotic design moves I've ever seen, because it's the motorcycles that cause so many freaking accidents down here. Hell, you see pictures in the paper every day of motorcyclists in terrible accidents. Cyclists and their passengers getting mashed and plastered all the time. Many don't have taillights or headlights. They're forever whipping through traffic, scratching your car, or knocking your mirrors out of joint. Good things they swivel, huh? And driving the wrong way against the traffic. You see that all the time. Yet the street departments and the road contractors cut them slack by letting them whip right through when us cars have to slow down or else. Just one of the 1,001 things that drives you nuts here in Latin America and cannot be changed, so get used to it. I know, most gringos and expats never do get used to it. So I'm giving you the boots on the ground heads up and what to expect. Now, if I was the chief corrupt fat ass of a Latin street department, I'd make the tumulos a little shorter and plug those center gaps. Now, you might be thinking, since 95% of motorcyclists drive tiny, fragile rice burners. Did he say rice burners? I know, that's very un-PC, so shoot me. Anyway, you might be thinking, how dangerous can they be? Well, newspaper stats point out 50% of motorcycle owners do not have driver's licenses. That bodes well for the rest of us drivers, doesn't it? So that's what you have to look forward to when you drive down here. That's your competition on the street. All right. Full disclosure here, I was with expat Eddie twice when he hit a motorcycle, or I should say, they hit him. Oh, they wiped out all right, and Eddie's car got a few scratches. Good thing he drives a used one. And you know what? Neither of us felt any sympathy for those guys. And Eddie did what his Latin lawyer unofficially advised, just kept on going. No, they didn't die or anything. They got banged up a bit, but surely they're out on the road somewhere right now endangering the lives of other people. Or perhaps justice or Darwinism has intervened. Who knows? I know. I'm probably going to get some emails from people saying, Johnny, you're a heartless bastard. You didn't even stop. Well, it was Eddie's call, and he was just following his lawyer's advice. And I remember Eddie looking at me and saying sarcastically, Johnny, can you give me one good reason why a person would leave the scene of an accident? I said, no, but I can give you about 10. For one thing, they stink, they're noisy, they blow smoke in your face, and even though they're missing headlights, brake lights, tail lights, you name it, they don't use the proper hand signals. They don't even know what they are. Not to mention, they weave through traffic like maniacs, run red lights all the time. They often have 3, 4, even 5 people on a bike and break every traffic law imaginable. Can I stop now? Is that 10 reasons yet? Yep, when you first get down here, when you see that stuff, it's both ridiculous and amusing at the same time. But when they scrape your car, hit you, or cause an accident, like expat Eddie always says, they become the enemy. Oh, and by the way, I know I mentioned in a past show that every single fast food restaurant, big and small, franchise or not, delivers to your house. So when you see that word domicilio, that means they deliver to your house. And in some ways, those delivery guys are the worst of all because they're on a schedule. They're trying to get there fast. They've got orders to get there fast, which is why so often you'll see it's delivery guys weaving through traffic and breaking every law in the book. And if you're down here long enough, especially in the big city, occasionally you'll see one busted up in a ditch somewhere. You can't roll the dice like that and not lose sometimes. Crazier yet, nearly every time a motorcyclist gets in an accident and his bike is destroyed, and he's not so badly injured himself, he'll start running. He'll take for the hills. I guess maybe you would too if you caused an accident and you didn't have a driver's license. Or insurance. Up in the States, that'd be sure jail time, right? And you'd think that would be true everywhere, but this is Latin America and you never know. Speaking of insurance for motorcyclists, which is probably the least expensive of all insurance by far, still statistics show that less than 5% of all motorcyclists carry it. In fact, the other day I was walking through a commercial district in a big Latin city. They had a nice big row of brand new underpowered, rice-burning, 100cc, soon-to-be hazardous pieces of road trash for under $1,000. And people who are in the market for that kind of junk don't have money. But these days, all dealers have a payment plan, $20 or $30 a month. So as it turns out, only cyclists on the payment plan have insurance. Just like when you buy a car on time, the dealer includes insurance in the payment. So if you anticipate an accident with a motorcyclist, make sure it's shiny and new. That way, you're sure he has insurance and he'll be properly licensed too. So he'll probably stick around. He won't run, even if his legs aren't broken. Now, Latin governments, cops, and transit authorities know motorcycles are a severe danger to the population. In fact, I've seen various public service announcements on TV showing a guy putting on his helmet, getting on his bike, driving through traffic, and actually slowing down at stop signs and stopping for red lights. Yep, he slowed down for stop signs. Looked both ways first. Kind of blew my mind because where I come from up in the States, they call that the Chicago roll. And even back then, some 30 years ago, that had cost you points and probably $200 or $300. So even in a public service safety announcement, the motorcyclist was breaking the law. And now, quite recently, I've even seen some Latin insurance companies run some TV commercials showing a happy young guy buying a motorcycle and signing up for insurance. And the monthly cost right up there on the screen. Get this. Starting at $4 a month. Yep, $4. Now, a month or so ago, when I was renewing my own car liability insurance, I saw pamphlets and ads everywhere and asked the lady at the desk how that motorcycle insurance promo was going. I pointed to a big poster on the wall with a happy Latino walking up to a desk with helmet in hand. Well, the young lady looked at me, wrinkled her nose, and said, "Not good." Yep, even $4 a month is a little outside the budget of an average Latin American motorcyclist. Hey, now, don't get me wrong. There are upscale people down here who ride BMWs, Ducatis, Harley-Davidsons, even Indians. And those things can cost as much as a car. And you can guarantee a guy who's bought a bike like that has insurance and is obeying all the rules, too. So yes, they've got all the high-end motorcycle dealerships down here in Latin America. Every big city has them all. But still, so few people buy them compared to the regular rice burners that you could go for days and not see a single one of them. However, on weekends, you might see a few parked in front of high-end restaurants and malls because they are mostly Latin rich guys' weekend toy. Yep, those high-end bikes are cool, all right. Many years ago, back in the States, I had one. And you know, there's a lot of freewheeling, adventurous expat gringos who were into Harleys back in the States. And sometimes it stays in your blood, and you can continue that habit down here if you want to live dangerously, and that's sometimes what owning a bike like a Harley or a Ducati is all about. Yep, they've got all the support in the dealerships down here, but I'd advise against it. First of all, as I mentioned in a past show, the cult of Harley down here is not like the cult of Harley up in the States. Down here, it's a bunch of rich guys in pristine leathers and accessories. Wimpy wannabe weekend warriors by our standards. Meaning if you're into Harleys down here and want to hang with Harley guys or Indian guys or Ducati guys, whatever. Like one of my gringo buddies, Mike, always says, and he owned a Harley dealership here. He said they're all terrible posers. It's like these guys are dressing up for a Harley fashion show. He's a big tough guy, ex-Marine. He said there had been a few Harley events where he's had the overwhelming desire to pop one or two of those guys in the jaw. But he said he held off because it could hurt repeat sales, you know. And those posers, they do have money and they buy a lot of accessories. And that's where the money is. Now this one middle-aged Latin Harley poser, a successful Latin business suit during the week, but on the weekends, all decked out in his perfectly unblemished leathers. Anyway, I lost track of him for a couple of years and ran into him again, not so long ago, at a Latin American Costco. Kind of rambling through the aisles with his wife, walking with a cane, and I said, "What happened?" He had an accident on his Harley. A truck went through a red light. I said, "Aw, too bad. When do you get rid of the cane?" He said, "Not likely," and he pulled up his pant leg to show me the glistening titanium of his prosthesis. Man, his weekend Harley habit cost him his leg. Was it worth it? Well, I wasn't about to ask him that question. But it sure reinforced my belief that you don't want to have a motorcycle down here. Not to mention, just recently, another good friend of mine, a gringo, tried his hand at a business importing slightly used Harleys from the States. He figured it could work because the Harley market down here is almost all brand new bikes. You see, the rich Latin posers will buy their Harleys brand new, and when they get tired of that toy, they leave it in the garage. They don't sell it. They don't need the money, and it's kind of a prestige first world item. And my gringo buddy Sean thought, now that might be a niche I can fill, and brought his first bike down. By the way, there are tons of used low-mileage Harleys up in the States for sale. That's how I bought mine in Chicago way back when. I remember the Chicago Tribune had 20 or 30 used Harleys for sale every day. But it's not like that down here. Even the biggest Latin American newspaper classified ad sections, it's not often you see a used Harley or high-end bike for sale. So anyway, Sean got that first used Harley shipped down. I said, "Bring it on over, I want to see it." So he came over, was about a 10-mile ride. And when he arrived, he looked at me and rolled his eyes and said, "Johnny, I almost got killed twice on the way here." Enough said about that. Except to say it didn't turn out to be the great business niche that he and I thought it might be. Found out it was a bit difficult to sell that bike, even though he had it priced absolutely right. So what happened? Well, Latin America's just filled with tire kickers. Big on bluster, short on cash. In this case, Harley wannabes who'll buy the leathers and the accessories here and there, but never have enough cash to buy the bike. And we're talking like $5,000 to $10,000 for a nice used Harley. The new ones, of course, go for 15 G's or much more. And down here, unlike up in the States, buying a Harley is a rich man's game and they've all got the dough to buy a brand new one. And that's a tiny, less than 1% of the population. The rest, the Harley rider wannabes, could never afford a brand new bike. Though maybe they could afford a used one on the payment plan, but the idea was to sell these imported bikes for cash. Believe me, the one thing you don't want to get involved with down here is lending money to Latins or giving them any kind of credit. So when you're talking that kind of cash, $5,000 or $10,000, that's one thing the average Harley rider wannabe doesn't have. So good idea, cool product, but an idea that was not quite ready for prime time. But where were we? Got off the track again. At the beginning of the show, we were talking about new car warranties here in Latin America. Yes, they do exist because they have new car dealerships. However, you'll find the big car manufacturers are smart enough to realize you don't want to give the same warranty in Latin America as you do in a first world country where people take care of their cars and the roads are nicer. And the maintenance generally gets done on schedule. Which is why when you buy a new car or a motorcycle down here, you get about half of the guarantee they offer up in the States or in the rest of the first world. Good example, Hyundais. They're all over the place here in Latin America. And in the States, they have what they call the world's best new car warranty. 10 years or 100,000 miles. Have you seen those ads? And down here in Latin America, you buy the very same car from a Hyundai dealership. Instead of 10 years, you get 5. Instead of 100,000 miles, you get 100,000 kilometers, which works out to about 60,000 miles. And you know, Toyota's got a 5-year, 60,000-mile guarantee up in the first world, and down here, 3 years and 50,000 kilometers. Same with cars built by Honda. 5-year, 60,000-mile warranty. And here in Latin America, 3 years and 50,000 kilometers. Same with Nissan, Chevy, Lexus, and many of the others. And you know, those extra long new car warranties are one of the reasons people like to buy new. So anyway, big car manufacturers have figured out it's a different world here in Latin America. They know from experience that their cars really take a beating compared to those same models up in the States and the rest of the first world. But wait a minute. In these days of extreme PC sensitivity, up where you live anyway, aren't those big car manufacturers socially, if not racially, profiling their buyers? Hey now, don't you think that calls for a class action lawsuit or two? It's a human rights crime. Different car warranties for different cultures? I know, it's the Russians. Where are those social justice warriors when you need them? Meanwhile, when you're driving down here, every single minute of the day you see horrible pieces of junk on the road that would never last 5 minutes up in the States without being pulled over and impounded. 40-year-old Datsuns, Honda Civics, Nissan Sentras, lights busted out, cracked windshields, yet these pieces of merda just keep on running. Considering there's virtually no maintenance, it's amazing. However, one thing Latin America's got going for it, no snow, no salt. Down here, you rarely see through and through rust, unless you've got a vehicle that's down to bare metal and you live on the ocean. Oh, and don't forget, here in Latin America, the sun is intense, and that beats the hell out of plastics. Though, admittedly, plastics have come a long, long way. But still, anything you leave outside that's been taking some sun for a couple hours today is going to eventually look pretty shoddy. All right, changing gears, no pun intended. Been getting some emails about vaccines here in Latin America. I mentioned in a past show how all the NGOs and do-gooders are coming down and injecting little kids, and because it's coming from the first world, the parents think it's just peachy. However, just the other day, a bunch of us gringos and expats were sitting around talking about vaccines, all of us saying that we'd never recommend it for our own kids, that is, if we had them. Well, it just so happened, my maintenance guy knocked on the door for something or other, and I said to him, Nectaline. What a name, huh? Nectaline. Easy to remember, though. Good memory aid, like nectarine. I said, Nectaline, how many vaccines have you had in your life? And he's around, I'd say, 45 years old. And his eyes widened and he looked at me and he said, in Spanish, of course, none. I said, what? Because, you know, in all my life, I never met an adult who had absolutely no vaccinations before. And man, I'll tell you, this guy is a fit, wiry, tough old SOB. Obviously, an excellent case for not vaccinating anyone at all. Then I asked him in Spanish, of course, what about childhood diseases? You know, measles, mumps, chickenpox, the usual suspects. He said, yeah, I had all that stuff. But vaccinations? Vacunas in Spanish? Nope. Neither did my parents, my grandparents, or my 13 brothers and sisters. Then I asked, as diplomatically as I could, by the way, I've been told I don't particularly excel in that skill. Can you tell? Anyway, I asked Nectaline if all his sisters and brothers were still alive. He said no, two had died. I said, how? He said one died out in the campo, that would be the jungle or the brush. Machete went into a beehive and they got him. Whoa, what a way to go. And another brother died a few years back in, get this, a motorcycle accident. Now, Nectaline and his brothers and sisters grew up in the campo, that'd be way out in the boonies, hundreds of miles from the big city. Then I asked him, when you were living there, you remember anyone getting vaccinated? He said, Don Johnny, to tell you the truth, those little pueblos are very spread out. There was no doctor in our town, just a couple of medicine ladies and some comadronas. Those would be midwives. He said, though there were a couple of small pharmacies, he himself never saw a doctor till he was 25 years old. and only because he needed a chest x-ray and a clean bill of health to apply for jobs in the city. Then I said, what about your kids? He's got 5 or 6. He said, oh yeah, nurses come to school every so often and give out vaccinations. And he said that with some pride, as if to reinforce the fact that his kids were much more part of the modern world than he ever was. Thank you, Bill Gates. You disgusting lard-ass pusball. All right, on that happy note, I'd like to mention once again that the info and early bird sign-up information for my Expat Insider Seminar is available at www.thenewexpat.com. Just click on the seminar link at the top of the page to check out the itinerary and all the places we'll be putting boots on the ground in and around Guatemala, Central America. So come on down to the seminar and get a massive head start on your Plan B. Now, I know a lot of you gather up tons of information. You tune into all kinds of alternative shows. Yet still, most of you haven't pulled the trigger on your Plan B yet. Do you need a little bit of a push? How about this? Just out today, a report by internet security experts, Symantec. They're reporting that a hacking group called Dragonfly 2.0 have gained access to 20 power company networks and grids. According to Symantec, the hackers gained access to the interface needed to control power stations and equipment they could use to disrupt the grid. Symantec Corp. security experts say this time hackers were in there just to look around. They admitted groups like that are targeting energy companies carrying out reconnaissance work for a future attack. And that's just what they're telling the public. All right, so if you're on the fence, how much more bad news do you have to hear before you get that Plan B underway? Remember, the only place down here in Latin America that's strategic at all to First World Big Brother in the deep state is the Panama Canal. Come on, when that big reset button gets pushed up north, wouldn't you rather be sitting in a hammock, sucking down a Mai Tai, watching the chaos and the martial law from a nice safe place 1,000 miles or so away? Believe me, you don't have to be a prepper down here. Come on, with 4 growing seasons and perfect weather, prep for what? So you gotta get rolling. And if you can't get down to the seminar, the next best thing is to take my Expat Essentials course. See the free video that explains it all at expatplanb.com. And remember, you can always do a one-on-one phone or Skype consultation with me. Download my phone consultation form at thenewexpat.com. Oh, and if you sign up for my Expat Insider Seminar, there will be no charge for the consult.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my 3 videos. See ya. Nos vemos.